Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. Normally we do go through a specific song, its lyrics, and its impact, but every month we like to do a little bit of a digression and talk about something that is Sondheim adjacent. This is because of the support we get over at our Patreon page, so you can definitely go over there, patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. This month, I put the call out there, and what people voted on was like they wanted to hear something that was adjacent but still had Bernadette Peters. And what people voted for was The Goodbye Girl, a 1993 musical. Out to discuss this, I think, probably mostly forgotten musical at this point, is Tess Robinson. Tess, thank you so much for being here.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Before we get to talking about The Goodbye Girl, which I do have a lot of things I want to talk about with The Goodbye Girl, but you're in theater yourself. You're going to be jumping in and doing your own production, directing your own production of Sondheim on Sondheim here very, very quickly. As just a starting off point, what got you into the theater in the first place?
Oh man. I mean, I always performed growing up. I started out doing ballet, and then my parents put me in like a Saturday performing arts club, which I did for like 7 or 8 years. Continued performing all through school, went to university and did a joint music and drama degree. And now I'm in London continuing to crowbar as much theater into my life as possible.
Sure. Was it musicals though? Was the big thing at that young age?
Yeah. Always musicals. I mean, it's very a very British entry into theater, but I think it was going to see my first pantomime at Christmas.
Oh wow. Yeah, okay.
That you kind of start to see people singing and dancing on stage, and straight away I was like, yeah, I want to do that.
This is me, mum and dad.
Yeah.
What were your favorites growing up? Like, what was the stuff that you had on a rotation?
Embarrassingly, I was obsessed with Cats growing up.
Excellent.
And I still know the dance routine from the DVD production with John Barrowman. The dance routine to Mongo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. I could perform that at the drop of a hat.
Great. And you will right now.
Yeah. Like, you know, I was that girl on the playground who would force choreograph Cats with her friends.
I love that. It's like, yeah. The math and everything is fine and everything like that. But have you heard of a Skimbleshanks? Okay. I need to tell you about this railway cat.
For real. And then when I was in secondary school, I was really, really lucky that my music teacher was a huge Sondheim nerd.
Mm.
And on our syllabus for music, we had West Side Story. And he went in on the details. So we learned all about just like how to analyze music, which was awesome. But he loved Sondheim. And he introduced me to a whole bunch of his work to the point where, and I've listened to a couple of episodes of your show, and it's like a running theme that you have these like young, precocious girls singing like Losing My Mind and Sending the Clowns in school. That was me. I was one of those. So I was singing things from Follies, Anyone Can Whistle.
There's something visceral of seeing a young woman just like completely go Full mental breakdown on stage.
Absolutely. And for no reason. Like, that kind of audience have no idea who this composer is in this, like, small town in Wales. But sure. I was giving it, you know.
What is your sense, at least currently, the appetite for Sondheim in the UK more broadly? Is he revered still over there?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, not long after he died, they put on the production Old Friends.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Which Bernadette Peters was in.
Correct. I'm not going to name names because I don't want to get them in trouble. Someone I know was very kind and sent me an audio recording of that production. Yes. Way before they made the video production. So I got to listen amazing. In a little bit.
Yeah, because in the UK, you can stream it for free
yes.
on BBC iPlayer. And of course, it's coming back in a limited run to London with Bernadette, with Lea Salonga, Janie D. Huge appetite for it. There's so much of Sondheim's stuff going on at the moment. And certainly after he died, it was just kind of like, just wait, everything is going to come out. And a lot of his stuff is done on the amateur scene as well and in the drama schools in London. So you can go and see a Sondheim show at absolutely any day of the week in London. Very, very highly revered. The Sondheim Society is based out of London.
Yes. I interact with them on Twitter occasionally, so.
Yes. Yeah, we're collaborating with them on our show to host a panel discussion about Sondheim's relationship with the theatre that we're performing in, the Bridewell.
Something that I don't know if I've really leaned into a whole lot. Sondheim loved London as well, like when he was alive. He really enjoyed London, mostly because he felt that his stuff was received better over in London than it was in New York City, with the sole exception of Sweeney Todd, where he said that was not, it was kind of rejected in its first run, at least in his opinion.
It's really interesting, and I wonder if that's because in London it's very old-timey, you know, the theatres are ancient. There's a real appreciation for the history that goes into theatre. And I went to see the Oklahoma revival in London recently with a friend of mine who's from the States. And I said, you know, what's the difference like between the actual theatres in London and on Broadway? And he was like, well, all of the Broadway theatres are like, they feel brand new compared to the West End. Because the theatres are hundreds of years old.
Sure,
I wonder if that kind of creeps into the way that people look at things. There is that innate sense of history. And with that, you do kind of look at everything that goes into writing a show. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what people ultimately appreciate about Sondheim is it's cerebral. It's a bit academic.
Yeah, I think an invitation to go a little bit deeper, right?
Yes.
I find like you can be surface level with a lot of the shows that Sondheim worked on, but I think you get the most out of it if it's like, let's peel back the layers a little bit. Like, why is this character singing this song? Why this moment? How does this relate to another song in the score? Like, there is more to it than just what you're seeing. Now, Sondheim on Sondheim, how did you find your way to the director's seat for this?
Before it was called Sondheim on Sondheim, it existed as a version of the show called Moving On, which was a celebration of Sondheim's work. And it was done at the Bridewell Theatre, which is where we're performing. And it was directed by a chap called David Kernan. In the licensing, he's kind of listed, it's like, you must include that it was conceived or inspired by the production by David Kernan. And the company that I'm directing with, we are the resident theatre company at the Bridewell Theatre. So when we were looking at shows to do this year, we wanted to do a Sondheim because we wanted to perform some of his work. We had recently, a couple of us, performed in a collection of work that MTI, the rights holders for Sondheim's estate, had put together a show called All Together Now that licensed out for any kind of groups, schools, community theatre, regionals, that was just supposed to be like a homecoming, a welcome back. You can perform this as something that comes after lockdown. And that included some material from Sondheim on Sondheim. It included the arrangement of Children Will Listen. And that got me and my musical director, Adrian Howe, listening to that soundtrack, and specifically the arrangement of Something's Coming, which is just gorgeous. It's so wonderful to listen to. We kind of thought, what better to do in the kind of years following his death than Sondheim on Sondheim, where he talks you through his life and his work.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, just maybe explain a little bit about what Sondheim on Sondheim even is, because if you're like me and thought for many years it was just like a review, you know, and it, like, just people getting up and singing songs.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more than that. And to pull the curtain back even a little bit further for people, I'm still considering maybe doing a mini season on Sondheim on Sondheim, at least the songs that were written for it. And there's some cut songs that were never performed in the original shows that are put into this as well. But anyways, that's a future problem for Kyle. Yeah. Tell us more about, like, what is Sondheim on Sondheim? To pitch the show, like, what are people going to expect to see?
I mean, it is some of his greatest works, reworked, rearranged, as you've probably never heard them before. Things that were solos become group numbers. Things are taken out of context in terms of genders being swapped or ages being swapped. But in between all of that, you have this phenomenal collection of video footage and archive video footage of Sondheim talking through his life and where this work came into his life and how he wrote it and why, parts of his process. It includes, like you said, some cut songs. So Aber Underneath, the cut song from Follies, and he talks about that.
Love is in the Air from Forum is in there.
Love is in the Air. The Wedding is Off from Company, right, which is excellent. But also, like, some of the absolute classics, like Waiting for the Girls Upstairs, Send It the Clowns, In Buddy's Eyes, Being then Alive.
It's not new anymore, but, like, the new song, I'll put that in quotes, of God, where he really talks about his his own life and people referring to him as such.
That is my favorite. And I keep telling people, like, and there is also an original song that he wrote for this show. And they're like, oh, so he, like, someone's, like, put stuff together. They've kind of, like, arranged it for some time. I was like, no, he wrote this incredibly self-deprecating, but, like, wonderful celebration of himself for James Levine's version of this. That is one of the most joyful songs to perform. So, yeah, I feel like it's truly, like, an excellent introduction to his work, because you get to understand about his life. But also, if, you know, you're a seasoned Sondheim lover, then it's also a huge amount of insight you get into his work that you may not know about, especially if you've not got to the level of kind of reading his books and that kind of stuff. It's a really, really great show.
What have you learned by being the director of this?
I've already learned so much. One of the things that I've learned more recently is around the structure of Follies. One of the funniest things that I learned, I came across through reading his book, Finishing the Hat, because we were doing In Buddy's Eyes in a rehearsal last week. And I read about how kind of the structure of the show changed. It was supposed to happen earlier in the show. But a couple of pages later, I read that the original version of Broadway Baby, which is included in parts in Sondheim on Sondheim, was called Tough Luck Tessie. And I was like, oh my God, there's a song that he did with my name in it. And the original lyrics to that are hilarious as well. And it's made even more special to me because that was what I sang for my drama school auditions when I was like 16.
Amazing. Oh, that sounded cool.
So I was like, wow, this is great. And even just like they've got the scanned in page of where he's written, handwritten the lyrics on his legal pad. And I'm like, that is cool to see Sondheim write your name. He didn't know it was my name, but it's it's just a very cool thing. I like it a lot. So learning loads more about Follies, which is great, is a show that I am coming to love even more as time goes on.
I mean, I guess that's maybe the question, and maybe that's your answer. If someone, a producer, came to you and was like, Tess, you can have whatever Sondheim show you want to direct next, what's the top of your list? What do you want to tackle?
It might throw you, but top of my list 100% would be Passion.
Interesting. Okay.
I think it is so categorically underrated. And I think it's so special because it is one of the shows that he came up with. He took it and was like, I've seen this film. I think it will be a good musical. And because so much of it is music and lyrics, there's not a huge amount of dialogue, that I was thinking about this today, how much he would have contributed to the characterization of, you know, the characters. So there's that. The other thing which I would love to do, is the frogs. Again.
And you're going to put it back in the pool is what you're going to do.
Put it back in the pool because the Bridewell Theatre originally was a swimming pool.
What? Okay.
And I know, you can look it up online. There was a production of a play called Amphibians done at the Bridewell Theatre where they removed parts of the stage to reveal the Victorian tiled swimming bath.
Interesting.
I would so love to do frogs in that space for that reason.
For Sondheim and Sondheim, who are your actors? Who do we have performing this?
We have expanded the cast. We had a huge amount of interest when we opened this for audition. We had like 90 people audition.
Wow.
Initially, we had wanted to cast 12 people just to expand it out. And the rights for it is really interesting because it acknowledges that, you know, this was a show that was primarily put together for specific actors on Broadway.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we knew we weren't going to get, you know, a replica Barbara Kirk to come in and walk into our show. And so we did consider, like, we're going to have to look at who we get and rebuild the show around them and assign parts that way. So we have 17 people that we ended up with because we had a huge amount of talent. And we are you might call it differently in the States. We're an amateur theatre company, so we work on an amateur license. But we get a lot of people in our company who retire from the West End or who change careers. A lot of people who have just graduated drama school or who want to go to drama school and want a bit more experience or want to kind of remind themselves what they love about performing. We've got some incredibly well-trained people in our cast who are also, you know, very experienced people who've performed in West End theatres and people who've performed professionally, and some people who haven't, which is kind of the joy of it. Some people who you do just tend to get, which is quite crazy, is, you know, in being in London, the sheer talent of people who've never considered being professional, and they walk into your audition saying, you know, I've never performed on stage before, but I really love Stephen Sondheim, so I thought I would come and audition for this. And then they're like a West End quality performer, and you just think, geez, like, this person could go.
Right, yeah.
They could go the distance. But they've come to our little show. So, yeah, we've got a range of people from all different backgrounds. It's going to be great.
And so if people wanted to, you know, find out more information about this production, how can they do so?
So you can go to our website, which is cedos.co.uk. So that's cedos.co.uk. It stands for the Stock Exchange Dramatic and Operatic Society. And we started way back in 1905, a group of stockbrokers on the stock exchange.
That's amazing.
Who wanted to create theatre. We've been going since then.
We don't know if this whole stock exchange thing is going to work, so we have to fall back on the theatrical arts.
For sure. So we do between six and eight shows a year, mix of plays, musicals, devised work sometimes. We're a registered charity. We have a whole bunch of members events as well. So
excellent. For this Sondheim adjacent episode here this month, what are we talking about?
The Goodbye Girl.
Think about your ever-loving mother as a luminous example. Just cause I've an appetite for heartache doesn't mean you need a sample. I'm counting on you to exercise good solid judgment, totally different from mine. Don't follow in my footsteps and you're gonna be fine.
Have you heard about this show before?
No. I had not heard of The Goodbye Girl before.
I have to admit that as far as like a musical version, this is actually the first time I knew about this when I was looking into, well, what could we talk about in regards to Bernadette Peters? I was clicking around and seeing some options. And I was like, wait a second, a Neil Simon show with Marvin Hamlisch doing the music, starring Bernadette Peters and Martin Short? How have I never heard of this show before? Mm-hmm. More on that in the moment, why I think I haven't heard more about this show. But I do know, though, the movie version. Like, I'm aware of the movie version from the 70s, which was Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason, directed by Herbert Ross, which, by the way, first of many Sondheim connections, because Herbert Ross would direct The Last of Sheila, which Sondheim wrote, and directed The 7% Solution, which Sondheim wrote a song for. So there's already a Sondheim connection that way. That's where I'm coming from. Knew that there was a movie version, which I've never watched. This is the musicalized version that came out 15 years later, basically, from when that movie debuted. And stars Bernadette Peters and Martin Short. This has been a very crash course. We were talking about this before we push record, but like, this has been a very big crash course into this musical. So I will say, it's not like I've spent hours upon hours deeply diving into every facet of this show. But as a generalized response from what you've listened to, and if you've seen anything, what are your initial responses to this?
So I didn't know the film, but I listened to it and I saw the show footage online. And it didn't scream film adaptation to me.
I do think they do a good job of like making this feel like a theatrical piece.
When I first listened, it kind of gave me How to Succeed vibes.
Mm.
And then I read, of course, that, you know, it's Marvin Hamlisch and he wrote a chorus line. And I was like, oh, yes.
Yeah. Ever heard of it?
Yeah. So, yeah, but there's some absolute bops in there. There's some great numbers.
I totally agree. I think there's some very much hidden gems as far as like musical numbers in this show.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say too, there is a bunch of stuff that you can go and watch on YouTube. They have like little snippets that they would send to theater critics and that kind of stuff. So you can see short pieces of each of the songs. There is, I don't know if it's opening night or something. Anyways, some interviews with Martin Short and Bernadette Peters on the red carpet. And then there's like 40-ish minutes of someone doing a bootleg, like recording the show, which it's fun to be able to hear like the audience respond. But I'll say, of all the, not that I condone going and doing bootlegs, but the weirdest bootleg, because you're sitting at the ceiling for most of it. Like they don't actually have it pointed towards the stage. It's actually kind of frustrating. It's like, I want to see what the dance number is, and I can't see the dance number that's happening.
I love some of that. Especially those kind of like opening night interviews where like of all people, and because you don't get this in the West End, you've got an interviewer with Carol Channing and then Gwen Verdon. I was like, come on. Like, wow. In the West End, it's like some reality TV star that you've probably never heard of.
This is so fascinating because this is Martin Short's first Broadway show. So this is his first Broadway show that he ever did, which really surprised me. For some reason, I had thought that he had done other stuff before this, but that's not true. Do you know of like the legendary Godspell that happened in Toronto?
I feel like I've heard of many a legendary Godspell production, but maybe not specifically this Toronto one.
So this is literally like people talk about this like it's the second coming. That was more of a pun than I meant it to be. But there was this production, Canadian production of Godspell, that has no recordings. So there's no video, there's no audio of it. But everybody who went and saw it was like, this is the most amazing production of this show. And it was basically before a bunch of people would go off to be very successful, because you had Catherine O'Hara, Eugene Levy, Martin Short, Paul Schaefer was the music director, Victor Garber was in it.
Wow, okay.
All of these people who would then go and have these amazing careers. Like, this is mid-70s that this production is happening. And like almost every single person who was a part of this show would just go off and be like a huge, huge star. Anyways, Martin Short was part of that cast. So I knew that he had done theater work before. So in my head, I had thought, oh, he must have gone and done some Broadway stuff before 1993. But no, this is his Broadway debut.
And had he done any kind of musical bits when he was on SNL? Was there like any inkling that he might do this?
Well, this is the thing too, because this is going to date me. So people are going to people younger have no idea who I'm talking about, but like there's a bit of Ed Grimley in his performance in this, like it's like a weird like man child thing that he does, and some of his dance moves are like 1,000% what he would do in as that character. I mean, he would do some singing numbers here and there, mm-hmm. for sure, nothing to this level. And I actually wanted to bring that up just because we're here at this point. What is your opinion of Martin Short's singing voice in this role?
I think it's great. I mean, in terms of the character, I'm all for it. Again, having not heard the show before and listening to it and watching the clips, mm-hmm. I would never have picked him out as, oh, that's his debut, you know?
Yeah, he's very comfortable in this role, yeah.
Yeah, so incredibly like charismatic and characterful. I personally wouldn't have criticized it.
I'm dying! I told myself this tragedy would have a happy ending. I was lying. I'm trapped before the audience from hell, and what I'm selling, they aren't buying. I'm dying. I'm flopping. I let myself get tricked into appearing like some undiscovered gender. A bit of Al Pacino and a lot of Shirley Temple on a bender.
I'll say what my opinion is here, but I'm realizing before we get way too far into this, do you want to maybe give just a quick synopsis? Like, what is The Goodbye Girl about?
Okay. The Goodbye Girl, you've got a dancer and her young daughter, yeah. in a bit of a pickle money-wise in New York. She decides to stay in her apartment as opposed to kind of moving elsewhere, and then this guy turns up.
Recently got rid of her boyfriend.
Yes, yeah. Is recently left in the lurch by an actor boyfriend. So ends up staying in her apartment, or his apartment.
Yes.
And then a surprise sublet tenant turns up, having supposedly agreed this living situation. And this is wild to me, given kind of what would happen in present day, but they just decide like, oh, well, we'll just live together in this apartment and make it work.
It'll be fine.
It's New York. And then, you know, she gets back into performing and has this whole kind of disdain towards, I guess, her previous boyfriends who've been in showbiz. And this guy is also an actor. And the daughter is, you know, in the middle of it all and just wants her mum to be happy. And, you know, eventually they find love and they find the right path.
They find love, yeah.
Yeah.
And Martin Short and Bernadette Peters make it semi-believable that they would find love. So here's the reality of it. The production, like I keep saying, stars Bernadette Peters, Martin Short, book by Neil Simon, lyrics by David Zippel, music by Marvin Hamlisch. So we've talked about Marvin Hamlisch. Yeah, big one is a chorus line, but wrote a bunch of film scores as well. The Sting, The Way We Were, Sophie's Choice, Spy Who Loved Me. Zippel, I would say his other two works that people are going to probably be familiar with, City of Angels, he writes the lyrics to City of Angels, and then Disney's Hercules. So talking about Going the Distance,
yeah,
he wrote that song.
Classic.
Which is actually probably one of my favorite of the Disney canon. It's a good song.
Mm-hmm. It's up there.
We have this great team, I would say, of people that have shown that they are, you know, comfortable writing complicated material, coming in to collaborate on this musical. To answer the question I posed before we got into all of that, Marjorie is this oddity in this show, I find, because he is both the thing as a performer, with other stuff that I'm going to criticize, but as a performer, he's both the thing that I think makes this show work and not work simultaneously. It is really interesting to me. I watched some of that footage of like the book scenes, and it's like, yeah, he's nailing this, he's hitting the beats. There's the song Paula, I think.
Yeah.
This is Martin Short's like centerpiece. It's a reason why they perform it on the Tony Awards that year. Like, that is the performance they chose, because he does such a great job. He does probably the best impression of Jimmy Stewart I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, he nails the vocal patterns and the way he does, or the way that Jimmy Stewart spoke. So as a performance piece, I think it's so good.
Yeah, and Mary, all you have to do is turn me on. I'm like a sort of short order Cole Porter.
But then you get to a song that, again, really, really love. I think I can play this part, which I think is lovely. It's such a beautiful little song. But that is also the song where I can really feel him straining to get to some of the notes. Even in the performance, even in the professional recording, I feel like that song wants to end in like going up, and it doesn't. he has to like stay flat or even go down slightly in his performance. And it's like, yeah. Oh, like this doesn't feel like it's resolved 100%. But anything I see of it, like any of the like actual video footage, like, oh, I get why people responded to this.
Especially with the number, like Paula, like he says himself, like that's his favorite one to do every night. Mm-hmm. And you can tell.
Yes. Like he goes full ham.
Yeah.
And it requires it to be. So like it fits into all of his skill set as a performer,
yeah,
type of thing.
Is it?
I think of Bernadette being Bernadette. I don't know if she gets like the best songs to sing necessarily in this score, but what she is given, I think she nails,
yeah,
pretty succinctly.
And what I find interesting about that is when it transferred to the West End, what they did give,
songs.
What they did give Paula, they just ripped those right out and did the air quotes intimate version.
It's weird that the show called The Goodbye Girl basically gets rid of all of the girl songs.
Yeah, poor Paula. And it, and yeah, I read a lot about its transfer to the West End. And
yeah, what did you find out?
I mean, who was it? It was Ken Mandelbaum for Playbill, thought it was an absolute disaster. But it didn't see, it seemed to, you know, it seemed to do okay on Broadway. Like people didn't panic. But I think given the cuts they made to Paula's songs, it didn't go down well. And they took out my favorite number, A Beat Behind.
Oh, yeah, which is really fun. Yeah, that's a fun song.
And they replaced it with this song called Body Talk, which is so weird. It reminds me of one of the like original songs from Carrie. It's got that very much aerobics kind of vibe to it with like whisper singing. You know, you listen to it and you can just hear the haze and the dry ice coming on stage. And I catch myself thinking like, why did they do this? The Olivier Best Musical that year was Martin Guerre. Nine was also up, and Passion was up that year as well.
Yeah.
But on Broadway, they had Tommy, and it seemed like a pretty competitive lineup for Broadway that year because they had Wilt Rogers' Follies, and the classics were all there, Phantom, Miss Saigon, Crazy for You.
Right.
So I can see how it might have been a tough old time. With falsettos in there, Camelot.
Yeah, it's almost like caught in between two eras almost here because you have like the big British musical invasion from the 80s, right?
Yeah.
With cresting and kind of going down in the early 90s. From any history book I've read about Broadway, like the 90s were kind of a scary time for Broadway because like attendance was down, box office was down.
Yeah.
Times Square was kind of a sketchy place to be in at that time. Things were kind of in a bad way, but then we were very close into the rents and all that kind of stuff, kind of reinvigorating Broadway. So I think they were kind of trying to figure out like what does Broadway have to say? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And so you have the Will Rogers Follies, which is basically a throwback to a different type of Broadway.
Yeah.
And you have this type of show, which is like, well, let's try doing something contemporary, modern, that sort of thing. But
yeah, something maybe
not necessarily really catching on either.
Was going to have that commercial appeal with it being attached to a movie. Yeah, it ran what, 6 months?
Yeah, 188 performances is what I believe I read. So it's like not an outright disaster, but like not a know, the full run that you would probably hope for. I think what I've read, I mean, back then, I think you were wanting to go for about a year to recoup all your costs.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's probably a couple years to recoup all your costs, but it's not that like close on opening night type of thing here either. You said there's a bunch of bops in this score. So what are some of the songs that stood out for you?
Oh, I mean, okay, so A Beat Behind, I love.
35, and I can't go the distance, I'm a beat behind. Half alive, seems my whole damn existence is a beat behind. I'm not a seed and in need of condemning. I've got the drive to survive of a lemming. Time made me obsolete and a beat behind.
But I do love the fact that she's, what, she's 34, 35. It's like, well, I'm over the hill. I'm never going to be a dancer.
Right. Okay. But it is very, if Cassie in A Chorus Line was a comedy character.
Sure.
That and then Elliot Garfield Grant. I love.
His rules. Yeah, when he sits down the rules.
Don't Follow in My Footsteps. I think is really cute. Paula. I feel like those are all like super strong numbers.
Having listened to it now multiple times this week, I really do like the music of this show.
Yes.
I mean, I'm kind of a sucker for Marvin Hamlisch anyways, mm-hmm. to be brutally honest. I actually really like the way that he writes music together.
Mm.
I do have, it's this weird feeling I have where it's like 60% of the lyrics, I'm like, okay, this is cool, witty, fun. And then 40% of the lyrics, I'm like, I don't know. This is not doing it much. There's not doing much for me here.
Yeah. The, I forget his name every time. Elliot Garfield Grant. Because every time I think Elliot Garfield Grant is the same syllables as Buffalo Nickel, Photoplay Ink. Garfield.
Right, from Ragtime.
Yeah. And I don't know why that always, like, that just goes together in my mind of the way that he keeps kind of, like, announcing that and the way that Buffalo Nickel is sung. There's just, like, this weird kind of parallel between those for me. And yeah, also yeah. kind of, like, Franklin Shepard Inc. is, like, Elliot Garfield Grant.
That's where I thought you were going to go to originally. But yeah, no, that's fun that they have all the similarities and stuff there.
Yeah.
This is where I feel really bad, like, criticizing people. Because who am I? Like, I've never written lyrics before in my life. But, like, there is... Yeah, the good news, bad news, which is fun. But, like, to me, the best lyric in that piece is said really early. And it's like, I think that should have been your button. Like, that's how you end the song, which is, like... The bad news is the good news ain't so good. And like, that's actually a really smart little lyric.
Yeah.
Which is like the first thing he says. And it's like, well, there's nowhere to go in this song. Because it's like, nothing's going to be as good as what you just said there in that lyric.
Yes. Which is what I liked about Don't Follow in My Footsteps as well. Mm. It has those funny kind of almost, you know, doublets or like one-liners. I think it's just a really enjoyable number.
That's what I mean. Like, it goes back and forth being like, oh, like, yeah, I'm totally into this. And then to things like, oh, this could have been probably maybe workshopped a little bit more.
Mm.
If you read the reviews at the time, predominantly what people are saying is like, listen, Bernadette Peters, Martin Short are great. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to have a fun time if you go to this show. But it's a messy book. Like, it doesn't fully go together. And there's a lot of, there's some real dead spots that happen in this show.
Yeah.
Having watched the few clips I was able to watch on this show, I kind of get it. And again, take this with a very huge pinch of salt because I have not seen the full show. I could only see snippets. And some of the snippets I was looking at the roof, so I couldn't tell what was actually happening. But I feel like there needed to be a little bit more attention paid to some of the choreography or like where actors were placed. Because the rules one, like that one where he's that you just brought up, where he's saying his name constantly over the time, like he's crawling over the scenery and he's like really kinetic, and it's like, it's good, it's so fun to watch. And then you look at another one where like they're literally just standing in one spot singing this song, not moving at all. I'm like, there should be some visual interest that's going on here.
Yeah.
You have this big set behind you and you're just standing in one spot. So I can understand why some of the critics and even audiences were like, oof, there's some dry spots in this show.
Yeah. And I love it when mm-hmm. you have the creation of busyness on stage to suggest, mm-hmm. you know, you're in an outdoors context, you're in a park, you're in New York, whatever, when you just give people the most to do. So there's like one point where you've got like two pairs of people on roller skates coming across the stage.
Sure.
And I'm like,
yeah,
okay. They're doing the most.
We got it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bernadette Peters just for a little bit longer here then. Anything you wanted to say about her performance in the show?
So the first thing I did was kind of look at where it landed in her career. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, like, why do I think she did this? What did she do before? What did she do after? And I don't know that I've come to a conclusion on that, because I don't think it's like peak when it was like, oh, I am a dancer who is trying to keep up with, you know, the young crowd. I was like, but wait, like, at this point, well, like, we're starting to see the best of Bernadette. Like, I don't know right. if I would have cast her in that kind of role yet. I mean, in terms of her performance, I know there were reviews that mentioned kind of like when she was on Good Voice, it was a good show. And I was like, from what I heard, it was great. And I really liked the numbers that she was given in the show. And it does bring back that question of why they cut them going into London. Is like, did it only work right. when Bernadette did it?
This is a kind of a weird part of Bernadette's career because she does Into the Woods back in like 87, 88. And famously, like, people remember her being the witch, but she was only in it for like a few months. Like, she really just did that as a favor. And for most of the run of that show, it was not Bernadette as the witch. Mm. But then she doesn't really do any theater until this show. So a good 4 or 5 years between stints. And then, because this isn't like the, you know, doesn't set the world on fire, let's say, comes back and does a benefit concert of Sunday in the Park with George, goes back to do being a benefit concert for Into the Woods. And it's not until Annie Get Your Gun, that big revival in 1999, that she kind of comes back to the theater. So it's like, weirdly, like, doesn't do a bunch of theater, comes back, does this, and then again doesn't do a bunch of theater until like 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to look at, like, even in her, like, she wasn't doing much for film. Like, I don't really know what she was doing in 1993. Maybe someone who's like a huge fan of hers, like, I mean, she was voicing a character on Animaniacs.
Oh,
but, like, I mean, that,
yes, of course,
but it wasn't like super taxing.
Yeah.
for the few times that she showed up on that animated show.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. And I'm sure I read a review where people kind of talked about it being great to hear her sing these numbers that are kind of big Broadway-y kind of numbers.
Yes.
That they'd not heard since Mac and Mabel.
Right, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, because Sondheim is nothing for you. But I thought
she's
that was very
interesting. Great roles. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a weird one. I mean, obviously, there's got to be a reason why this is not kind of a super well-known show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's part of her history and it's interesting.
I do find it fun that she's given the song No More in the show.
Yes, I thought that as well. She must have thought that, like, every night.
Some other Sondheim links within this show. There is two Sondheim references in the lyrics, unless you came up with some more here. In the song, let me just get to my tabs that I had opened up here. So
I
in that song,
My Rules, Simpson.
My Rules / Elliot Garfield Grant, when he's laying down the rules, he sings, I like to shower every morning, and I don't like your panties wringing wet on the rod. And if you have to leave your razor on the sink, you run the risk I'll turn into Sweeney Todd.
I like to shower every morning, and I don't like your panties wringing wet on the rod. And if you have to leave your razor on the sink, you run the risk that I'll turn into Sweeney Todd. As I'm a crazy kind of guy who can't predict when nature calls or hunger seizes me, I'll use this honey of a bathroom and the goddamn kitchen anytime it pleases me. I hate animals.
There we go.
That is the first one, which is, he nails, Martin Short kind of does nail that line delivery. But the other one is from the one called Paula, an improvised love song. He has, you know, remade the rooftop, and he's trying to woo her and everything. And he's talking about how Paula makes him do things. And it's like, she makes my tail begin to wag, and nothing on earth could improve her. And if my lyrics make you gag, I'll apply the Sondheimlich maneuver.
Yeah.
Paula. on my knees, you're so much taller. But to please you, I would crawl across the New Jersey Turnpike. She makes my tail begin to wag, and nothing on earth could improve her. And if my lyrics make you gag, I'll apply the Sondheimlich maneuver. Paula.
Fun little wordplay that goes on there too.
Yeah, I didn't catch any of the direct references, but I read about how some of Hamlish's favorite musicals growing up were Gypsy. And I thought that that was really interesting. I feel like I can definitely hear some of that in the orchestrations, which I think is interesting considering a lot of the show is about mother and daughter.
That's true.
And then
maybe a reason why he was attracted to this in the first place.
Yeah. And I found more so a lot of, not necessarily references, but connections between people associated with Sondheim, particularly performers.
Yeah.
And this show in particular. So when it did come to the West End, it starred Gary Wilmot and Anne Cram. Gary Wilmot would go on to do a lot of things, but most recently he was in the Old Friends concert after Sondheim died that happened in the West End. And then also I think it was after the London production, it went to Philly, The Goodbye Girl, where it saw Donham Keckney, who's obviously done so much of Sondheim's stuff. One of the more tedious links that I was able to put together between The Goodbye Girl and my own show, Sondheim on Sondheim, is that when obviously it was in London, opposite Gary Wilmot was Anne Crum, who had just played Rose in Aspects of Love. She was replaced by Susanna Fellows in that show. And Susanna Fellows' daughter is in our cast of Sondheim on Sondheim. So,
no way. So that's so cool.
One of those, like, make a direct link between X and Y using only 5 steps.
There's a game I'm really bad at playing where you try and do that, where it's like you're trying to link this performer with this other performer through, like, you know, shows, Broadway shows,
or
any type of performance. It's like, oof, it's so hard sometimes. Like, how do I link these people together? Especially for Broadway stuff specifically, like, it's fascinating how it feels like there's so many people involved in the production of the actual shows. And then you really dig into it, like, oh, okay, you keep seeing like the same 8 names over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And they're all just like, that's how everyone gets linked up together. Mm-hmm. So as a kind of a wrap up here, so final thoughts on The Goodbye Girl.
I'm definitely going to listen to it more. One of the first things I did was go and look at the situation with the rights. And I was like, is this something that that could and would ever come back? Because, you know, we get, certainly in the West End, we get a lot of film adaptation musicals.
Yes, yes.
A lot. And in fact, where it was in the West End, in the Noel Coward, we've currently got the Great British Bake Off musical, which is an adaptation of a TV right. show. But I was thinking, you know, is this something that could be revived at all? But currently, the licensing is not available. But I do think it would be a good show to put on in a smaller regional venue. I don't see why not, because some of the numbers are spectacular, and you know, the kind that you know, you just want to see them staged.
Yeah, that was gonna be my final question, but I'll just ask it now, which is, like, you're only able to save one song from this score. What song are you saving?
For me, it's gonna be A Beat Behind, 100%.
I have to say, It was a real, like, race for me on whether or not I wanted Paula or I Think I Can Play This Part. Ultimately, I'm going to choose I Think I Can Play This Part, only because it's a song that you don't really get to hear a whole lot. It's a man who is saying, hey, I want to be your father. I want to be like your stepdad, right? I get to choose who my child is, and I'm choosing you. Mm-hmm. And that's such an interesting emotion that you just don't see in a lot of different shows. I think it's so true. Beautiful and sweet. I like that song a lot.
Does that sound like anyone we know? Anyone we've met? Who can we get? I think I can play this part, though no one's ever got it right before. I've a new interpretation and a lot of motivation, and I seem to know my lines by heart. I'm sure I can play this part.
For me, it would have been a toss-up between Elliot Garfield Grant and A Beat Behind, because I feel like those two numbers just have such great energy to them. But I'm a sucker for any opportunity for women to do comedy. So A Beat Behind, I think, is just so fun.
This is such a great musical theater piece too, right? Because the music is emulating that, because she's coming in a beat behind everybody else. That's with like the last little button of a joke that happens as well. So and part of the staging seems fine as well, because she's in a kick line. She's supposed to be in a kick line, but she's not getting it right.
Exactly. I was reading as well with my reading that I was doing on Follies sometime, talking about actually his influence on the creation of a chorus line, because he had been talking about how they put Follies together in terms of kind of all of the women coming back in and doing their dances. The choreographer came in and kind of panned sometimes choreography ideas, but he stressed about how important it was as a composer to come in with a point of view for how choreography
with an
should
idea.
Be.
Yeah.
And he said ultimately he was ignored this time, but he said that it gave Michael Bennett the springboard for glory, because he went on to use some of those ideas for a chorus line, which I thought was great. I was like, go on, Sondheim, take credit for all of the musicals. I love how as a choreographer you can play with that number as well.
By the way, also something I learned about here just yesterday was that the original production was directed by Michael Kidd. Pretty famous director, and I just rewatched The Birdcage here recently, so it always makes me laugh, because there's a scene where Robin Williams basically does all the different, like, you want to do Fosse, 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 or Michael Kidd, or Twyla. Anyways, funny scene, and I always remember Michael Kidd's name because of that.
So
in The Birdcage.
My question for you, if this did miraculously get revived on Broadway...
Okay.
Who would you have playing Elliot to be that characterful?
Oh, to be that character. Gosh, like, well, my first instinct, he's too old now, I think. Leo Norbert Butts, who I think would have the right type of like manic energy that you kind of have to have.
Yeah, the same as what he gave in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of someone else who'd be...
Because I feel like recently there's... Well, maybe not recently, but more so you're starting to get some like SNL crossover with Broadway of like Schmigadoon. So yeah, I do wonder like if there are other ex-SNL cast members who, you know, would have been good revival casting for this show.
Yeah, because I just looked it up. So Martin Short would have been in his early 40s when he was doing this role. So I'm just trying to think of someone who would fit there. Fit into that, and then would also have like the musical chops to be able to pull off some of these songs. This is like a tall order. Like, you have to have like a very specific type of person to kind of make this work. Yeah. Do you have someone in mind?
I can't say I do. I mean, I love SNL, but they don't air it in the UK, so I've only ever been able to watch like a ton of clips.
Right.
But I have really enjoyed watching Schmigadoon, which obviously has a lot of SNL members. Kind of go through that.
Yeah. See, the other way, the other pitch would be, who do you want to play Paula, the Bernadette Peters role? And I really want to see Cecily Strong be in a Broadway show. So
she would be
very
great.
Badly. And I think she would actually do really well in this.
Yeah.
So maybe do a benefit concert with her in this role. I think it would work really, really nicely.
I think so too.
Tessa, thank you so much for joining me here today. This has been really fun. If people wanted to, you know, see what you're up to, follow you online, is there a way to do so?
Yeah, I'm at Tess Robbs on most platforms. Twitter, Instagram is my main one. But yeah, people can definitely follow along what we're doing for Sondheim on Sondheim.
When is it running? When is Sondheim on Sondheim start?
Oh, so it's running. We have a super limited run. We're doing the 4th till the 8th of July in London at the Bridewell Theatre. And it'll be accompanied by a couple of panel discussions in collaboration with the Sondheim Society, where we're bringing back some people who were around, including kind of the executive director at the Bridewell Theatre Company when the Saturday night premiere happened and when Moving On happened there. So we're all going to get together and talk about Sondheim and London and the theatre. So all of that is going to be happening, the first week of July.
That's very exciting. This is going to be released here at the end of May. So you have a month to get those tickets.
Fantastic.
So I encourage people to go and check that out.
Yay.
Great. Thanks, Tess.
Thank you so much.
This is going to be a new thing. We're going to do something new for the very first time. You get to choose what song plays us out. So you can pick something from the Goodbye Girl or whatever else. But you pick whatever song you want to have play us out.
I am going to pick L.A. Garfield Grant.
Let's do it. Martin Short and all his manic mania. So.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Tess.
Thanks, Kyle.
Mr. Nice Guy. You're living on an Elliot Garfield, an Elliot Garfield Grant. Don't thank me. You're living on an Elliot Garfield, an Elliot Garfield.